Hey, Chris Manning here from Lockdown Cavs. Today's show is myself, my co-host Evan Demerle, talking about 2020 resolutions or things we'd like to see from the Cavs in 2020. Later this week, we're going to have that Kevin Love, KPJ podcast that we'll dive into some of the young guys on the Cavs. We were supposed to do that last week. The trade broke, so we're going to throw that up tomorrow. And then later in the week, you'll have myself and Jeff Siegel breaking down the Clarkson trade and future Cavs cap space and some free agency targets for next summer. But without further ado, let's do the last podcast of 2020 on things we'd like to see from the Cavs in 2020. This is Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, Evan, let's get into 2020 resolutions. You go first. What is your first resolution for the Cleveland Cavaliers as we start this new year?
Where do I want to start with this one? Not necessarily a resolution. See, because the term resolution to me sometimes means like I'll stick with it for the first few weeks, but then, you know, I tried my best to go to the gym every day. Maybe I'll go 2-3 times a week, and eventually that turns into once a week, and then you just never go, and then you realize, what the hell happened? But for the Cavs, I think a good resolution for them, at least because the trade deadline is soon after the new year begins, try and find a good trade package for Kevin Love that also it just benefits all parties involved. You send Kevin to what is at least considered a playoff contender, maybe not a title contender, but the return is favorable enough that it doesn't want to make me do a gainer off of a terminal tower when I see that it's just Hassan Whiteside and like a second round pick in 2026 or something. So
that's the darkest timeline.
Yeah, no, that would definitely kill my vibe a little bit. So I don't know. It's just, yeah, no, I think like a fair return. And there's like, we talk about the Phoenix package, the quote unquote Phoenix package that we would love to see happen, but after the Jordan Clarkson trade, I've started to kind of scale it back a little bit, because maybe this is just the Cleveland sports fan in me that we're overvaluing the assets again, and so maybe people need to pump the brakes a little bit. But if you could get a return that is close to Tyler Johnson, Dario Saric, and then maybe Mikal Bridges, which, you know, maybe let's pull Mikal Bridges out of this one at this point, but that's not as bad as, like I said before, that Portland offer that could happen. And God, that would be just absolutely awful.
Yeah. I think if you're the Cavs, I think that's a good one. I think we're past the Rubicon and like that being something I wouldn't do. I don't think Kevin at this point, I think what makes this really tough is, I don't think Kevin, based on like the way we're seeing him impact this Cavs team, is a guy who's going to like make you super good on his own. And he needs to come into a situation where I think he's going to make you better when you already have something. That I think that and just his sheer salary, I think, limits how many places he could potentially go. Yeah. I even talked to someone who had some idea about the thinking of the Suns front office. And like, there's people in their front office who like don't want to like mess up future salary cap space by taking up Kevin Love. Which I think I don't, you know, like, I don't know. Cap space is like your best friend until you sign like one of the disastrous contracts or the 2020 version of what people spend in 2016.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That's the problem. And Kevin Love, like, I think there are concerns about his health. I get that, how he's going to age these next couple of years. But I do think there is probably a deal to be found for him. I would be picky about how much you want to. I don't think you do deal just to do deal. I don't think we're at the point, like, I don't like games like the Celtics game are an indication to me that Kevin has not like quit on this team by any means. I don't think he's going to do that. But I would be picky about it. I think Portland and Phoenix still make the most sense to me. You know, Sacramento, which would be kind of mean to Kevin, frankly, is like another option too. I don't think Miami really makes all that much sense. There are probably other teams I'm not thinking of. But I think Phoenix and Portland just are the ones that will continue to make sense to me, but we'll see if anything happens. There is about 6 weeks left to go before that deadline. The Cavs are clearly open for business on this. I think it would benefit both parties if it's done correctly. So we'll kind of see how that goes. Okay. So my first one is related to the trade deadline as well.
Okay.
For me, it's on Tristan Thompson. I would just say if I'm Colby Allman and the front office, I'm not in a rush to move on from Tristan Thompson. Now, I don't, the caveat here is I don't know what Tristan Thompson wants. It would not surprise me if Tristan Thompson like wants to get to a contender because he wants to compete for a title. I get that vibe from him when he talks about things and how much he seems to revere the years with LeBron and competing for a title. It would not surprise me if like next summer he, you know, considering where he's at in his career, if he says, I'm going to take a little less money. I've already got my big, big contract and I'm going to go sign with somewhere where I think I can make a deep playoff run. Maybe that's, you know, he goes down to, maybe Miami needs a guy to back up Bam and he goes in there. I think he'd be great down there. You know, maybe he goes out west to someone like the Clippers or the Lakers or just someone like that where he, I think, and it's probably the best version of him, is a 15 to 20 minute of the game guy helping teams with offensive rebounding and defense and locker room culture. That's like probably the best version of Tristan, and he's going to make less money that way. But if I was, I could see him wanting to do that. There will be a lot of teams that I think could use Tristan Thompson next year if he's healthy. But if I'm the Cavs, I'm thinking about needing to build culture and wanting to build actual culture. And I, in the last year, don't you just think that matters so much? I think it matters a lot more than a lot of people realize. I think, you know, I love the analytics. I love analytics. I love using numbers. I love just like kind of there are ways to arrange this in terms of chess pieces. Tristan Thompson is going to help you because he's going to hold people accountable. He's going to kind of take guys under his wing, show them the ropes. He's done all of this. He's willing to do that. He's been the good leader of the locker room this last year and a half when things have been pretty bad. Not a lot of guy. I don't think every guy in his situation would have been willing to do that. So I'm just going to say, like, I think trading him will be hard. I think next summer we'll see what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. But even if it's another 1 year deal where you overpay him just to keep him around and you don't burn your cap space on other stuff that doesn't make a ton of sense, I would not be in a rush to let Tristan Thompson go.
No, I totally agree. And like, it's multifaceted with Tristan, since maybe it's a little bit of the fan of me and I'm attached with him. He's the longest tenured Cavalier on this roster, so you want to keep him around for that aspect in a sense. We touched on this before, but Ante Zizek will not be here next year, so you need to have somebody play center. And Tristan Thompson, by all means, is just a good overall player to have at your five spot. And like you said, finally, he's the vocal leader between – I mean, let's just put it this way. Him and Kevin Love are the two leaders in that locker room. Tristan's the more vocal one of the two, where he's not afraid or doesn't hesitate to call out his teammates on their shit, and especially with the media. And it's definitely like – you said, like, you have a young and impressionable team like this. You need to build a culture and a foundation and something that is consistently strong going forward, that, like, even if it's just a one-year overpay, like you said, Sexton will be in his third year. Jetty will be in his fourth year, technically his third year, playing serious minutes. Garland will be a sophomore. KPJ will be a sophomore. Windler will be a sophomore. And then Cleveland will likely have another top five or top 10 pick on the roster as well. Let Tristan leave his thumbprint, and maybe it's a little bit of the LeBron legacy as well, where just showing them how to take care of their body and just approach games on a serious game to be, like, just be a student of the game and learn everything, because that's something I have heard from a lot of Cavs veterans, is playing alongside LeBron has taught them so much on how to play winning basketball and meaningful basketball, that if Tristan's able to pass off that legacy to the younger guys and then say it's just a one-year deal, and then, like you said, he goes to the Clippers, which I think would be a perfect fit for him, but
especially if they don't have Montrezl Harrell next year, because he's probably gonna get paid.
Yeah, exactly. And it just, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm not ready to let him go as quickly as I am some of the other veterans on Cleveland's roster, because maybe it's a little bit of the fan attachment, but at the same time, his numbers are great across the board this year, but his value can't be quantified necessarily when it comes to what he provides in terms of chemistry and player development and just overall just presence in the locker room. And that's something you need with a team that's young and impressionable, because losing sucks really hard, and Tristan probably knows best. It's hard to believe it's been almost 4 years ago when they won the championship, and he wants to go out and play that again. But I think by all accounts, he's still happy here. Like, he doesn't seem, I don't know, he's kind of a hard guy to read sometimes, but he seems like he's happy to be here and doesn't mind taking the role of the mentor on. So
why not just give him one last payday and then let him go out there and ride the twilight of his career if it's in the Eastern Conference or in the Western Conference or wherever. But yeah, no, I'm totally on board with you just maybe not being so quick to move him because he has a lot more value than what he actually will probably get on the trade market.
Absolutely. Give me adults in the room. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but before we do that, going to let you know today's podcast is brought to you by Calm. We talk about fitness a lot, but there's another side of the game that's just as important, and I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron James and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body. Calm can help you train your brain so you can sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. He says, getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind. Sleep for him is an important part of that mental fitness routine too. And if you want to be like LeBron, you can go to calm.com/lockedinNBA and you'll get 40% off a Calm premium membership. With Calm, you have access to nature scenes like LeBron loves, like rain or leaves, and so many more, like sleep stories and meditations. Again, for a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to annual membership at calm.com/lockedinNBA. That allows you to unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started today at calm.com/lockedinNBA. That's calm.com/lockedinNBA. We'll be right back. Okay, Evan, we're back. Give me your next kind of outlook thing, resolution, whatever you want to call it for the Cavs in the year 2020.
I guess eventually just accept the fact that Colin Sexton is probably better suited as the team's overall six man and eventually make that transition to that. And I'm actually kind of working through the numbers right now. Maybe this is a little bit of a preview. It'll probably be up before this podcast is out. But I'm firmly in the camp at this point that Kevin Porter should be the team's starting two guard, or even he can start at the three, and then you put Jetty in at the two. But I think you need to give Darius Garland full reins of the offense working with the starters. Enjoy Kevin Love while he's still here. He has good chemistry with Tristan Thompson. Maybe it's a bit of that clutch connection. But I think as well, with Sexton, he's a score-first point guard. Not even a point guard, he's just a score-first guard. And I think he could easily fill the void left by, not at small forward because Clarkson played some minutes at the small forward in Bayline system, but he could fill the void as that scoring punch off the bench and a bit of a spark. And I'm totally okay with just making that transition as these trades start to continue and happen. And Dante Exum provides a bit of a wrinkle with that because we talked about how in yesterday's episode that Colin and Dante would make a pretty interesting pairing because they both are kind of opposites in terms of their skill sets, and getting those two comfortable will be a really good thing as well. But I know people want to poo-poo the idea that you have a first round pick that is in his sophomore season, and you're already relegating him to the bench. He's the eighth overall pick, and I think he's more Lou Williams than he is Pat Beverly at this point, and that's totally fine. I'd rather have a very solid six man who has a certain level of comfort with Garland, who the team likely views as their point guard of the future, and then as well some of the bench guys as well, who's just not expected to move the ball as much, but just get buckets when the team needs it most. And Colin's always been comfortable doing that. And I think it's just personnel and rotation wise, it makes more sense to eventually just transition him towards that six man role.
So one of the things that'll be really interesting about this is all I really know about Colin Sexton is that he's super competitive. And yeah, like is wired to just really work. I don't know what him going to the bench, I don't know how he would react to that.
He said, it was after the Cavs got absolutely, I think it was when they were steamrolled either by Philadelphia or Miami, and Kevin Love just said, we sucked. And maybe it was just two different games, but either way, he said, do you think a change is needed? He's like, it might be. And then Beilein was considering changing the rotation as well, and people were wondering, well, is Garland going to get benched or Sexton going to get benched? And they asked Colin straight up. I think it was Angel Gray who asked him, would you be okay with coming off the bench? And he's just like, yeah, I'm okay with it. And granted, you're saying that, it's not actually happening, but I think that he's still a kid. He's not old enough to drink yet, but he's also an adult, and I think Colin is such a competitor that maybe this will give him that chip on his shoulder to go out there and maybe prove Cleveland's coaching staff and Cleveland's front office wrong, saying like, listen, I shouldn't be coming off the bench. I should be starting. But eventually kind of accepts, hopefully at least, accepts the fact that this is the best way to use his skill set abilities. And I think just, you know, you gotta, it's inevitable at this point. You might as well just nip it in the bud now instead of just trying to drag out what is clearly, it's working to an extent, but it's not a perfect match between him and Garland.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the bench is his future role. You know, I think it's easier than him like having to sub out at the 5 minute mark. I think that's the right tweak to make, especially with a guy like Eximen to facilitate that. But I also think, you know, I think the way to do it is probably like at some point, like after the All-Star break, maybe next season, like at some point do this and just like turn him into your, try to make him into your version of Lou Williams. I don't think he maybe will ever be as good as Lou Williams. That's like a high bar. Lou's a legend, and Lou is just much more smooth as a scorer than Colin is. Colin's like truly like a bull. But I think that's kind of the right path. And that's the kind of player he just seems like he is, especially because like the passing stuff for him is like a real issue.
Yeah, no, it definitely is concerning. And I remember when Joe Varden was still on the beat, there was concerns about his, like internally between the organization, that he noted that about his playmaking ability and that they might view him more as a career six man going forward. And I said, if that's the case, man, just rip the Band-Aid off. Like, and if it's like, if he's that upset, I mean, he's on his rookie contract still. He would have value across the league. I'm not saying trade him outright, but if it became such a problem where things clashed with the coaching staff and him, he wouldn't be that hard to move either.
Okay, so my next one is also related to 2020. I don't think they should be in a rush to just like burn cap space. I want the Cavs to like actually stay committed to what they're trying to do with the youth, like in getting KPJ and then eventually Dylan Windler and Garland and all these young guys minutes. When you look at one of the things I didn't like about how they built when Deion, and it was the Deion Kyrie era, they tried to like rush into being the eight seed. Like they traded for Luol Deng. They brought in Spencer Hawes. They made all these deals and trying to just be competitive. Now it didn't really, and tried to force the growth. They tried to like make Earl Clark like a starting caliber small forward. If I'm the Cavs, I like maybe signing guys to like 1 year mercenary contracts. Like if you overpay Joe Harris for a year to like give you competent wing play, that's fine. If you do that with other guys, that's fine. You know, we'll see what happens with Royce O'Neal, who's like one of the league's best 3-and-D guys this year. I would, if you locked him up at a good number and you could like try to make that work, even though the Jazz can match it, like I'm good with something like that. But anything else, like I don't want to try it and just like force things in just because you have money to spend. Like there's no, like, you're going to be at the floor regardless. You are going to, you have like good cap. You're going to be in a good cap situation moving forward. And you're not going to get, again, you're not, 2021 isn't going to be about like signing Giannis or anything like that. Like that's not going to happen. But what they can do is they can try and like sign the right guys at the right time while these guys are still cheap. I am just saying, don't force it. It's a weak free agency class next year. And I think one of the worst things they could do is like overpay someone just because like they have money to do so and like want to get some name or some competent guy in there for 4 years. Like, don't spend the money when you don't have to do that just yet.
No, I totally agree. And I think the only player I'd be comfortable with them committing serious money to going forward is Bogdanovich out of Sacramento, because he might be available, and maybe Malik Beasley in Denver, because I don't think they're going to be able to match him. But other than that, like, yeah, no, I'm totally fine with, like, I'm in the same camp as you, where even though you have all this salary to work with and play with, you don't have to blow through all of it, because then it's just going to hamstring your development and everything going forward, because then those will be contracts nobody wants to take on either. And that's the issue in itself, but I don't know. Like, I think Cleveland has a pretty solid foundation. I have a feeling they will try and gain a first-round pick, perhaps, like they did last year when they traded for Brandon Knight and Marquise Chris and got that pick from Houston. Like, I think something like that is possible. And you have all these young guys at this point. Why would you go out there and spend all this money on a already in a bad free agent class, but like you're trying to get the biggest name in the free agent class, but you already have all these mouths you have to feed to begin with. So just stick with what you have internally, maybe sign a player to a mercenary deal. Like you said, Joe Harris would be a solid, I mean, a fantastic option, and just be would be a great redemption arc for Joe, Smoking Joe, as Austin Carr would call him back in the day. But I mean, like, I'm totally fine with just sitting on the salary cap, and if like, or the salary that they have to play with, and if that means even taking on bad money just to assist this rebuild going forward, I'm fine with that as well. It's just, this free agent class is really ugly, like really ugly. And I'm totally fine with Cleveland just sitting this one out and then maybe see, like you said, they're not going to go after Giannis or anything, but maybe at this point next year, we start getting an idea of what the Cavaliers are going to be going forward. And maybe you finally take the chance a little bit and spend your money on a complimentary piece that will help the team just make the playoffs again. I think that's the baseline goal right now, is just trying to make the playoffs. Like, you shouldn't expect a championship anytime soon. And like, maybe next year, based on how the draft goes and then how free agency and everything else goes, just in terms of internally retaining pieces, maybe that's obtainable after Garland and Windler and KBJ's sophomore season.
Yeah, I would say that one other name that will be an unrestricted free agent that I don't know like what his situation will be. Like, some of this will kind of link back to what I said about Tristan. You know, if he goes, then like this would certainly make this more applicable. But Montrezl Harrell is going to be an unrestricted free agent. Mm-hmm. He's probably going to get paid a lot of money, and there's probably a cap on how much I would pay him. But like, the Clippers have a lot of money committed to other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's available, and you think about how good of a pick and roll player he is and how useful that could be for Garland, for Sexton, for Jetty, for everybody, I could be very, very into the Cavs making a run at Trez. That to me would be pretty appealing. But like, you look at the rest of the list, I think Bogdanovich is another one. You know, a mercenary contract for Joe Harris. You know, we'll see what happens with Brandon Ingram. But like, you know, even though can't believe Jabari Parker's like barely almost only is still 24 years old, but like, that doesn't really interest me. You know, Baines wouldn't really interest me. You know, some of these guys, like maybe like a 1 year stopgap at center if it's bringing back John Henson or something like that, or maybe you roll the dice on a Harry Giles. But there's like a lot of guys that you go down the list, it's like, I want no part of this. And I think you're right. Like, a guy like Malik Beasley would be another guy that I would be pretty interested in.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, I'm just going to kind of rule myself out of the Brandon Ingram sweepstakes. Like, that's, I was one of Brandon Ingram's biggest critics for the longest time, and I never saw what was, and then I'm just like, I don't see it. And then maybe it's just the fact that Los Angeles doesn't have a shooting coach and they don't really prioritize player development out there. But the season with New Orleans has been a awesome surprise with Brandon Ingram. And then I was just like, all right, yeah, let's get Cleveland in on this conversation. But from what I've read, I know he's unavailable at the trade deadline for New Orleans. So I feel like they're going to try their best to make the money work. And if he could come to Cleveland, great. Commit as many years and as much money you feel comfortable with him, because I think he complements a lot of what the Cavs are going for really well. But I think he's out of that contest. But no, yeah, it's just like, either you throw a lucrative offer as a mercenary stopgap deal for a player just to fill a position of need, and you just roll the dice again the following season and through the draft. But I don't know. It's just like, it's such an unappealing free agency class that I'm okay with Cleveland just kind of playing a little bit more conservatively than they would, like, so they don't end up in cap hell and then hamstring themselves, that they're just like I used to call it the treadmill of mediocrity, which is what the Atlanta Hawks under Josh Smith had. I don't want to end up in that situation. So
yeah, that's very fair. All right, we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back to touch on our last two kind of look ahead for the next year. So we'll be right back with more Locked On Cavs. Okay, Evan, we're back. Give me your last thing for 2020.
Oh, mine's really brief. So I talked about this when I had Ben on, and it was really awkward because I fumbled it. But let's just be honest. People who cover this team probably started as fans first.
Yeah, I 100% did.
Yeah, so Kevin Love may not be here much longer, so let's get him in the GD All-Star game so we can at least say that we might be the worst team. The Cavaliers might be the worst team in the Eastern Conference, but God damn it, we have an all-star on our roster, and I think we could use our platform for the better good to help highlight the fact that there's still an all-star caliber forward on this roster, at least compared to how bad the rest of the East is. So, just, you know, being optimistic here.
Yeah, I wonder how much I wonder if he's like a coach's vote guy.
Yeah, because the problem is, I think Giannis is also an option at power forward, and
Kevin Love is not going to be a starter. I like feel very sure about that. I think he's going to have to be a coach's pick.
Yeah, but I mean,
and I also would wonder like how much
we could use our power for good here, and we could outvote an entire country at this point and get Kevin Love on the All-Star roster as a starter. That's my thought process, at least.
Yeah, just the unity ticket of NBA Twitter is get Kevin Love an All-Star game. I think it'd be fun. Yeah. You know, I wonder how much the Kevin. I think it'd be fun. I don't know how likely it is. It would be very fun to me if this happened. I think Kevin Porter Jr. like should be in. I think like Sexton should be in the Rising Stars game. Porter Jr. should. So Love's averaging 16 and 10 rebounds and about 11 rebounds. That's the last time he was an All-Star in 2017-18. He averaged 17.6 and 9.3. I listened to the low post on, and they were talking about All-Stars, and it was like, I can't remember who he's even talking to. Was it Simmons? I don't know. Oh, no. It was, I don't remember. Who knows? My brain's broken. But he was talking about All-Stars, and like Love didn't really come up. And I get that. Oh, it was Bruce Arthur and Eric Green. Love didn't come up in the All-Star thing. His numbers are close to where he was. He has the name recognition. You know, he's kind of like a guy, I think maybe coaches reward him for playing well-ish on a bad team. Yeah, I feel like that he's the only guy that would actually make the actual All-Star game, but I think KPJ and I think Sexton should at least both be in the Rising Stars game, maybe Garland as well. But you know, he hasn't maybe played at the level even Sexton was last year, so maybe that hinders him. KPJ might be a little bit of a biased pick in terms of me just thinking he should be there because he's been really interesting.
No, that might be part of it because we're drumming up the KPJ hive. Let's get him in the dunk contest too. What the hell? Let's just make this really fun. But yes. No, I'm actually looking at the players now. So if I had to pick like a starting rotation, Giannis and Embiid feel like a lock, and then Pascal Siakam makes a lot of sense, but so does Jason Tatum. And then if you start going down the list a little bit, because it's in front court for the East, Kevin Love have to go up against Jimmy Butler. Chris Middleton, I'm a big fan of, but he's polarizing to most people. Yeah. And then after that, it really Andre Drummond, he's a solid option. Nikola Vucevic, also solid. And then you have – I like Domantas Sabonis a lot, but maybe he doesn't have – you know what? He could get the coach's vote too. You know what? No guards in the coaches' vote. Just put a bunch of big guys out there, and we'll run five out with a bunch of big dudes at this point. But you know what? Maybe, just maybe, unless the fan vote doesn't happen, Kevin's going to have a kind of difficult time making the All-Star roster this year in Chicago, which is a bit of a bummer because he's Cleveland's best player, and you want to try and get a little bit of representation from all the Eastern Conference teams. But the problem is, he is also in the same spot where arguably two of the best players in the Eastern Conference in Embiid and Antetokounmpo, and then you have Pascal Siakam as well, who's just awesome. And then Jason Tatum, who's good too. Like,
and Jaylen Brown's probably in there as well.
I think Jaylen Brown technically qualifies as a guard. Yeah, I know he does.
Okay. So maybe that opens up front court spots. That's a good point.
Yeah. So it's just, unless it's the fan vote, maybe the coaches vote, but yeah, no, there's a, I'm looking at the list now and I'm like, maybe this resolution won't happen. So yeah, no, we have to use our power for good and celebrate the last remaining member of the big three before he's inevitably traded. And I can pick up an All-Star jersey, Kevin Love jersey, just one last time as a memento. And then I can tell my grandkids one day saying that I use the power of my podcast to get a player on a bottom feeder Eastern Conference team into the All-Star game as a starter. So that's my resolution for 2020.
I'm into it. Okay, mine is going to be draft related. I feel like we are we'd be remiss if we didn't touch on this in some way. I'm just going to say the 2020 draft.
Yeah.
And talking with Trevor Magnotti and talking with other smart draft people, it's loaded on stuff the Cavs have invested in the last two drafts.
Yes.
So I'm just going to say, if I'm Kobe Altman, if I'm talking to Gandy and all the guys that are going to be scouting this, be very picky about what you're doing in the draft. Don't like you're, it's going to be a, depending on where you pick, who you can get. You know, I think you look at guys like Cole Anthony, guys like Maxey, Nico Mannion, there's like guys that you're just not going to be on the Cavs list. Shouldn't be just be, unless you're going to like flip Sexton and like that gets into its own set of complications on how you would do that or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also saying you, this draft is, I think you need to put a lot of emphasis on like making this draft work, making this draft really kind of hit for you. And I think sticking with an identity and sticking with what you want to do, I think is going to be really key. I don't know who they're going to pick. You know, I don't know if there's guys that are going to make sense for them or who they really like or whatever. It's kind of early in that. It's been a little quiet on that front in terms of, you know, aside from the fact we know that they saw the Mello in Australia, and I think they saw RJ Hampton as well. And you know that they're going to be, I think scouting all these types of, they're going to see all the top guys. Like they'd be remiss if they didn't do that. But if I'm saying like, if for the organization, you need to hit that 2020 draft, but I think you need to learn from your past mistakes and not do something that is going to make it really hard to work. I'm not saying you need to draft purely for fit. But if, you know, if you're at five and like you've, you know, you're the best guy on the board is just someone that doesn't fit with Sexton and Garland or whatever, and you can move back and you could take someone like, you know, if Denny Avdija is like available at eight or something like that, and you can move back, pick up extra assets, do that, and don't just force it just to force it.
I agree.
I just think like that, considering what happened the last time the Cavs like drafted a bunch in a row, and they haven't really, I mean, you could say Garland and Sexton overlap, but then they went and got KPJ, they went and got Windler. I think they need to stick with just drafting stuff that fits an overall vision and not just drafting talent and hoping it all meshes together. I think for the Cavs, they need to just develop something that is resembling a culture and a group that fits together in a way we haven't ever seen them do before.
No, I totally agree with that. And it's funny you mentioned Trevor because he's always my go-to when it comes to the draft. But like Anthony Edwards, he has told me by and far is the best player in this draft class, but he's not like a Zion Williamson caliber player at this point. He is comparable to, I think he said he told me Markel Fultz. This is like that kind of tier talent, at least what we're getting from Markel Fultz now. And it's definitely a down draft here, but no, I agree. If the best player available is at the point guard spot, like if it's Cole Anthony, LaMelo Ball, I mean, RJ Hampton can play shooting guard and point guard, but, and even Nico Mannion from Arizona at this point, I would consider trading back. And to mention players that the Cavs have been scouted, the sports rabbi on Twitter sent me a message saying that he saw Cleveland scouts watching a Maccabi Tel Aviv game. Should probably check out Denny Avdija at this point. And that's a player that I think you and I both are pretty high on, and I know Trevor is as well. But if that's an option, like you said, like the Cavs are sitting at the spot and a guard's available, trade back, because you don't want to keep hamstringing the development of the two point guards you've drafted the last 2 years, and then even a shooting guard or that can hamstring, or like you need a player that can mesh with the rest of this, because this draft class, I don't know. I mean, it's hard. It's a crapshoot. I'm not a draft expert, but from what I've gathered, it's not like you're expecting a ton of all-stars out of this, but just take what you think positionally, like you said, and culture-wise would fit best for this team going forward, because the Cavs are at a bit of a crossroad where, like I said, like we talked about earlier, you got to see what they're trying to invest in free agency and everything, and then what they're trying to build going, like what the vision and identity they're going to build is, are they going to be flirting with the playoffs this time next, not this time next year, but late in the next season? And I think the draft will definitely have an impact on that, because it's going to shape how free agency goes as well. And you want to make sure you just make the right pick. And I'm totally comfortable trading back and not drafting another point guard, because I will slam my face through my desk if they draft another point guard.
So. Yeah. Watch. It's going to be the Cole Anthony draft. They're going to be like, we're just going to get into full chaos. But we'll see. You know, we'll see what kind of input B-line will have and how he might adjust. I don't know. There's a lot of interesting stuff to come. Please share with us your 20 things you'd like to see from the Cavs in 2020 on Twitter. Tweet us at Locked On Cavs. Evan, again, thanks for joining me and doing this co-host as we wrap up 2019 and 2020. And I'm excited. 2020 Cavs basketball is in, I think, a much better place than we were last year and going from 2018 to 2019.
No, I totally agree. And hey, you know what? Maybe we need to get our eyes checked, Chris, because we both wear glasses. But I think the vision for the future of the Cavs is 2020. So
look at that. Look at that. Rounded it out. Well, that's going to be it. This will be our last pod for 2020. Just so you know, the Cavs plan New Year's Eve. Evan and I are going to both I'll probably be doing some other stuff, watching the game at some point, and then we're going to be recording on Wednesday, New Year's Day. So we'll that'll be up later in the day on Wednesday, but you will have a show on Wednesday about that Cavs-Raptors game. At some point, it just might be not in your feeds right away on Wednesday morning like we aim to for most of the shows. But for myself, for Evan, this has been Locked On Cavs. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again in 2020. Wow, that's weird to say.